Thank you everyone for joining. The topic of today is entering a non-Jewish house of worship. And we'll investigate the possibility that this might be permitted. But I have to tell you up front that from my childhood, it was never even an issue. I mean, just the very thought of walking anywhere in the vicinity of a church was absolutely repulsive. My wife has a minig that when she passes a church, she simply says, Shaket shaktenu v'toev tavenu ki toev ahi. You know, three times over, she says. And that's based on an ancient tradition. Now, in terms of my preparation for this shiur, I want to share with you the following. I've been looking around, trying to find source material. And basically, after sifting out, you know, everybody finds what's appropriate for them, I found four pieces that spoke to me. Again, that's after going through a vast array of literature. The best piece I found is the first page that you'll see, which is an English article by Rabbi J. David Bleich. That article has 27 pages to it. I only photocopied, I think, four or five, maybe even less, because I was running short of paper after a while. But I honestly encourage anyone who wants to research this topic, that should be your first stop on the train ride. It's an excellent piece. Yes. His name is Rabbi J. David Bleich. You may not see it on the page, but if you have a pen, I can lend you my pen, then write it in.
Second page.
Or you'll see it on the second page. And this was printed in Tradition magazine in the year 2011 by the Rabbinical Council of America. As I say, it's at least 25 pages long.
What year again?
2011.
Tradition,
2011. That's all I have. Sorry. Okay, that's number one. And what Rabbi Bleich does is he presents an overview of all the writings on this topic. You know, he goes back to the Gemaras and he has the Rishonim and the Rambams, and then he goes to Tshuvas of Achronim. It's an amazing piece of research. Absolutely amazing. His English is like post-doc English, and there are many words here which require, at least for me, to, because I'm not preparing for my college book, but, you know, I have to really take out a dictionary and look them up. However, my only comment here is that in two or three points, which absolutely fascinate me, he skirts the issue and he says, you know, this is outside of the purview of this presentation. I don't know if I can make it any louder, so maybe move up a little, Roz. You know, if you sit here, you'll definitely be able to hear me, because between my loud voice and this wonderful microphone. Yeah, the second thing that I want to tell you about, and you'll have some pages there, is what's called olamot.net, which is a fabulous internet site for topics of many different sorts, especially on Parsha, mostly Halacha. There are over 350 Shiurim on that site.
Can you repeat the name of it?
It's called olamot.net. I think it should be, let me just see if it's by chance, you know, just to save me the hassle here. It might be in the pages. Well, I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's in Hebrew. This is only for Hebrew speakers. There's been no translation, to my knowledge, of any of those 360, 350, 360 shiurim. Again, it's called olamot.net, and I cannot say enough words to recommend this for almost any topic you'll come up with. This one is called Knisa L'Mokom Avodah Zarah, going into a worship of idolatry. And to get onto olamot.net, what you have to press in are the following letters. O-L-A-M-O-T. And then you put a dot and you write net. Olamot.net. It's absolutely amazing. Okay, Olamot.net. Now a third source, you might only see one page, but there are so many things on our that are related to our topic, is again a Hebrew site that's called Eretz Chemda, which is just a few feet from here. And basically what they do is they field questions and they publish the answers. The answers are usually very short and terse. You know, they just tell you whether it's allowed or not allowed. I'll just read to you just the titles that are relevant to us on Eretz Chemda. I only printed for you one of them, but he has the question of going into a, not the church itself, but the entrance way into the church, and not entering into the church. He has another question about visiting a church for a governmental, as a governmental representative, let's say, for example, the state of Israel. He has another issue about watching a ritual of Avodah Zarah from a distance. He has a question about whether or not you're allowed to enter a church for a funeral of a Catholic friend. Another question about learning how to play music, an instrument, in the house of a very religious Catholic. That's not so simple either. He goes on to say that we have an issue about davening even in a gym of a church or an administrative wing of the church. He wants to know whether or not you're allowed to build a synagogue on the premises of what used to be a church. Are you allowed to enter into church for art purposes, just to enjoy the art? Are you allowed to enter into a church simply because you want to become a tour guide? And finally, his last question, which is the one that I found fascinating, is that you want to purchase an item from a non-Jew, from a Christian, that was used in their worship. You want to use it for obviously a totally different purpose. So that's going to be the page of Mitzchem that we hope to get to today.
Is that in English or Hebrew site?
All that is in Hebrew.
And then spend the site that one is? Okay.
That's called Eretz Chemda. Okay. You'll see it, www.eretzchemda. So again, that's just to give you an idea of what I thought were the best sources for preparing this topic. My Bible for today really is Rabbi Bleich. And that's the article of which I printed a very short, a very small amount of the article. But that's what I was able to do. Now, we're going to have to study the following. Christianity is predicated on the belief in the Trinity. And the first question that we have to ask, which perhaps of all the questions we're going to have today is the easiest one to answer, is the Trinity idolatry? In Hebrew, is it Avodah Zarah? Because if it is, then we can't enter into a place of Avodah Zarah. We can't benefit from Avodah Zarah. We can't see Avodah Zarah. We have to stay far away from it. And we're going to go through some of the sources, starting from the Mishnah, about how far we have to go from Avodah Zarah. So that's the first question that we have to address. What is the status, according to our law, of the Trinity? We know that this is a basic doctrine of Christianity, and pretty much all denominations of Christianity accept the concept of the Trinity in one form or another. I'll get back to that a little bit later. Don't ask me any questions about that now. Hold your questions on that point. But for our purposes now, we're going to assume that Christianity is fundamentally predicated on the belief in the Trinity. Is the Trinity Avodah Zarah? The Rambam, in a number of different writings, takes an unequivocal stand on this question. The Trinity is Avodah Zarah. And on the page that I copied for you, which should say on the bottom of it 74, the Rambam says that Christianity and the Trinity is Avodah Zarah. And there's no question about it. And many of the poskim accept the Rambam hands down, without even an issue. Well, the greatest of them probably is the Chassam Sofer 150 years ago, and Shuvah's Chassam Sofer accepts the Rambam. The Rambam appears over and over again. The Rambam wasn't counting his ink to repeat himself time after time that Christianity is Avodah Zarah. You'll find this in his Pirush HaMishnayis in Masecht Avodah Zarah. You'll find it in his Mishneh Torah in Hilchas Avodas Kochavim. You'll find it in Hilchas Machalas Asuros. Over and over again, the Rambam identifies the Trinity as Avodah Zarah. Now let me make one point before we go on. There are many Christians who will claim that they are monotheists and they believe in one God. There is virtually no way of reconciling monotheism with the Trinity. The Trinity is made up of Trinity, of three gods, not of one God. So those Christians, and it seems like it's very common amongst the Christians, for some reason they have vested interest in claiming we are monotheists, there's no way that that could logically be upheld. You know, if you want to call it a leap of faith, you know, for a Christian to say from one side of his mouth he's a monotheist and from the other side of the mouth say I believe in the Trinity, that leap of faith is mutually exclusive. You can't be a monotheist and believe and accept in the Trinity. And that's the Rambam's unequivocal position, which he repeats time after time. I could have ended my shiur right now, And nothing much would be missing, because that's the bottom line of this entire discussion. The Trinity is a fundamental belief of Christianity, and it is Avodah Zarah. However,
except that's not the halacha. That's the only problem.
No, it is the halacha. It absolutely is the halacha. And that's why I say to you, without any joking around, I could have ended the shiur right now, and you'd be missing nothing. However, I just want you to know that there's a very equivocal statement in Tosfos that appears in two different Masechtos, in Avodah Zarah and in Sanhedrin. Now Tosfos makes the following comment. The Gemara talks about the possibility of a non-Jew taking an oath on the name of the Trinity. In other words, the case is that a Jew is administering an oath to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew is taking this oath in the name of the Trinity. And Tosfos at this point introduces an element into the equation that begins to baffle our minds. And he says that this is permissible. Now, we cannot in any way abet a crime of idolatry, even if that crime is being committed by a non-Jew. How then, asks Tosfos, can it be possibly permissible to administer an oath to a Christian when he's swearing to the name of the Trinity? Again, I'm not going to mention the three parts of the Trinity. That's not for, this place is a makom tefillah, so you know exactly what I'm referring to. So wait a second, just give me 1 minute to try to explain what's going on in Tosfos. Tosfos says the following, and again, this is a very subtle point, and I'm hoping I'll be able to get it across. Nobody has promised me that I'll be successful, so I'm going to try, but you have to bear with me. There are two concepts in halacha, and the question is, are they equal or are they different? One concept is called Avodah Zarah, idolatry. The other is called, and again, if I had a whiteboard here, I'd write it on the board, called Shituf. Shituf, I guess loosely, could be translated as co-sovereignty. Imagine a case of a kingdom that has two kings. Well, let's say a king and a queen, and they both have equal dominion. That's called Shituf. Shituf, for a Jew, is the same as Avodah Zarah, but not for a non-Jew, at least in the simple reading of Tosfos. So what I'm going to present to you now is one particular way of understanding Tosfos. This presentation is based on later commentaries. The early commentaries accept the same approach as the Noda Yehuda. The Noda Yehuda lived 3 centuries ago. He's probably the most brilliant Ashkenazic mind in Psak Halach that we had. And I'm going to present to you the Noda Yehuda's way of reading the Tosfos in just a minute, but the later commentaries, more contemporary, they interpret Tosfos as saying the following. A non-Jew is not enjoined from Shituf. Okay, now let's explain. What is Shituf? What is this concept called co-sovereignty? Basically, according to this reading of Tosfos, the reason why you're allowed to administer an oath to a Christian in the name of the Trinity is because the Trinity is not Avodah Zarah for a guy, because it only comes under Shituf, which means that the Trinity is not claiming that there are many gods, which is called polytheism, but rather there's one God that's made up of different gods, so to speak, and all these gods are equal partners in that one God. When you have partnership in the deity, that is called Shituf. And Tosfos, according to, again, the second reading of Tosfos, meaning the later day commentaries, understands that Shituf is not included in the 7 mitzvos of Bnei Noach. Why? Because Shituf is not Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, which is idolatry, is 1 of the 7. But Shituf, which means co-sovereignty, is not 1 of the 7. Now again, you know, this is not the place and the time to have a theological discussion about what the Trinity is. You know, I'm not qualified to discuss that, nor am I interested in discussing it. I will just tell you that Tosfos makes the following distinction. There's one thing called the unity of God, and there's another concept called polytheism. And Tosfos, according to, again, this later reading, I'm about to present the earlier reading of Tosfos, which is the Noda Yehuda's reading, but let me just get by this one. Tosfos is now differentiating between a rejection of polytheism and a belief in one God, which is called the unity of God. And Tosfos is saying the following. A non-Jew, by virtue of Avodah Zarah, which is 1 of the 7 mitzvot of Noach, cannot accept polytheism. He cannot accept that there are many gods. As you know, the pagans believe that there are many gods. And if you you read some of the paganistic writings, you can see it in they have this god and that god and so forth and so on. The Christians don't accept that, according to this reading of Tosfos. What they accept in the Trinity is that the God, and there's only one God, is made up of 3. That denies what we call the unity of God. In Hebrew, that's called Yichud Hashem. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Now, I cannot overly emphasize the following. Even according to Tosfos, Shituf is Avodah Zarah for a Jew. If a Jew would believe that God is not the unified God of Hashem Echad, but God is made up of many gods, that would be Avodah Zarah. And for that you'd have to give up your life. So there's no question in anyone's mind that the Trinity is Avodah Zarah as far as we're concerned. The way that these later authorities read Tosfos is that Tosfos is Machadish, a new Chiddush, a new insight. And Tosfos is saying that the Trinity is not polytheism, but rather it is Shituf. It means there's a partnership in that God. But there's only one God who's made up of different parts, so to speak, and different partners. That's called Shituf. And according to this later reading of Tosfos, Shituf is not the same as Avodah Zarah. Now the Noda Yehuda says that that's not the way to read Tosfos. And again, if we had a couple of hours at our disposal, I would show you that the Noda Yehuda's way of reading Tosfos is much more accurate. Tosfos is discussing one issue, and that is whether we're allowed to administer an oath to a non-Jew on the Trinity. Here's where Tosfos makes a distinction. He says that as far as the oath is concerned, this is based, the violation of taking an oath on the name of another God is included in a pasuk, and take a look, if you will, on page 75. I believe I photocopied page 75 for you. You'll see about 8 lines down from the top of page 75, a quote from Dvarim, Perek Yud, Ubishmi Tishava. You must swear by my name. And if you swear by the name of anything other than God, you violate this prohibition. Says the Note of Yehuda, that's where Tosfos says that this prohibition does not apply to a non-Jew. And therefore, Tosfos says that if the Trinity is Shituf, and for a Jew that would be a violation of taking an oath in the name of a partnership of what we call co-sovereignty, that violation does not apply to a non-Jew. But Tosfos says in the Note of Yehuda, that never went as far as saying that denying the unity of God is not Avodah Zarah. Again, that was a double negative. Let me see if I can say it again in the positive sense. The Note of Yehuda would claim that even as far as a Ben Noach is concerned, insofar as he is enjoined from Avodah Zarah, from idol worship, included in idol worship is any denial of the unity of God, including Shituf. Meaning, Tosfos accepts, and this is the outspoken view of the Rambam, over and over again, that Shituf, the Trinity, in which there is co-sovereignty in the deity, is Avodah Zarah. Tosfos also says the Note of Yehuda ascribes to that position. And for sure, the Trinity is Avodah Zarah, even for the non-Jews. Tosfos is only saying, as far as the oath is concerned, if a non-Jew takes an oath on the name of the Trinity, he doesn't have this prohibition. It's not one of the 7 to take an oath on the name of another God. So he hasn't violated that particular prohibition. But his belief in the Trinity, even according to Tosfos, is Avodah Zarah. Now, what does it mean to believe in the unity of God? So I wanted to just point out to you that on page 76 of the handouts that I gave you, the Rambam delineates 3 elements which are fundamentals of our belief that make up what we call Hashem Echad, the unity of God. The first is to tell you that although man could belong to what's called a species, which means that there are individual men and together they make up a species, that species is a collective entity. In the case of God, God is not like a species. It's not a collective entity. It's not made up of different parts. Number 2, says the Rambam, there's something called the unity of an aggregate. That sometimes you can aggregate, you can combine different elements. Like in chemistry, we have compounds, and they make up one whole. The unity of God is unique in that it's not a compound. It's not an aggregate. It's not a sum total of different parts. And finally, the Rambam says that even something called an atom, let's say, for example, even that denies the concept of the unity of God. God is called a simple substance. He's not made up of parts. He cannot be broken down. Destruction applies to everything in the universe because everything is made up of a compound. And if you take apart the compound into its component parts, you've destroyed it. In the case of God, He's a simple substance, and therefore He doesn't lend Himself to any sort of destruction. The Rambam then goes ahead and says that any denial of this concept of the divine unity is Avodah Zarah. So the moment that a Christian believes that the God, the deity, is broken up into different parts, even if you call it a compound, an aggregate, call it what you will, it is Avodah Zarah. Tosfos? I'm not sure. If you read Tosfos like the Note of Yehuda read Tosfos, then Tosfos agrees to the position of the Rambam that the Trinity is Avodah Zarah, and a Christian would be involved in violating Avodah Zarah if he ascribes to the notion of the Trinity. And then says the Note of Yehuda, as far as the Shvuah is concerned, a separate din as far as oaths. That's already a Judaic thing. So then, according to the Note of Yehuda, Tosfos, like the Rambam, and this becomes, according to the Note of Yehuda, an absolutely universally accepted opinion, straight across the board, no Rishon could question this, the Trinity is Avodah Zarah, and that's the end of it. However, just one more line. However, the later commentaries, they read Tosis differently. And they think that the Trinity becomes Shituf, which means that Avodah Zarah means belief in many gods, many separate independent gods. Then there's the belief in the unity of God. The belief in the unity of God generates what we call a prohibition against Shituf, against co-sovereignty, and that was never given to the non-Jews. Okay, then, now I'm ready for questions.
If a broken Jew is a scientist and believes that an atom can be broken down, is he out?
No. An atom can be broken down. We believe sincerely, and I take an oath, that we believe that an atom can be split. But God cannot be split. The unity of God is such that it's not at all comparable to even an atom. An atom seems like the most indivisible compound that exists. No. Even an atom is not a simple substance. Only God is a simple substance, and that's the belief in the divine unity. And that, says the Rambam, any denial of divine unity, if you break up God into parts and you create some sort of compound, which is called a Trinity for Christians, that is Avodah Zarah. Does Tosfos take the same approach? It all depends. If you're in the Nod B'Yehuda's mode of thinking, Tosis would agree to the Rambam. And this is for sure Avodah Zarah. If on the other hand you take the later reading of Tosis, and if you're interested in reading all the literature on that, you'll see on page 75, note number 6. Okay, that's like a who's who in the last 5 centuries of literature. And they claim that Tosis is claiming that the Trinity is Shituf. And if it's Shituf, it's not Avodah Zarah, because the Trinity is not polytheism. It rejects polytheism. And if they reject polytheism, then although they don't accept our concept of the unity of God, that's not called Avodah Zarah. Yeah, please.
You're not the first one bringing this up. In the last 6 months, we've had this controversy here today. Rabbi Gottlieb, a few months ago, presented us a seminar saying that it was the vote of Christianity was a vote of Zorah. Rabbi Sprecher says the halakha that for Jews it is a vote of Zorah, for a non-Jew it's not. And I went to Rabbi Moshe Wiener's book written on the subject. So this is a very complicated subject in terms of whether or not, how can you say that, as you said, the seminar should be over because Rambam says it's a vote of Zorah to be done.
No, listen carefully.
Rabbi Wine.
I'm sorry, I don't remember your first name. What is your first name?
Rabbi Yehuda Leib.
I want to tell you this. This whole issue is only relevant to a non-Jew. It has no bearing on our discussion.
Including Rabbi Wine.
Okay.
The same comment.
And therefore, as far as we're concerned, the Trinity is Avodah Zarah, as far as we're concerned.
That's the
okay. Now, for non-Jew, you know, if I was giving a lecture for non-Jews, which I'm not giving a lecture for non-Jews, Rabbi Yehuda Leib, so therefore we can get into this whole issue as to whether or not a non-Jew is violating Avodah Zarah and one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach by believing and subscribing to the doctrine of Trinity.
According to Rabbi Moshe Wiener, he is.
Again, I don't care about Rabbi Moshe Wiener right now. Just listen to what Berzon is saying. Because you want to invite Rabbi Wiener, you'll invite Rabbi Wiener. But what Berzon is telling you is that I'm not lecturing for Goyim. So Rabbi Wiener is talking to Goyim, and if you'll invite me to speak to a group of Christians, I'll talk to Christians. But right now, Baruch Hashem, I'm talking to Jews. And as far as Jews are concerned, this whole debate is totally irrelevant. Because, bottom line, nobody questions that the Trinity is Avodah Zarah for non-Jews. For Jews, I'm sorry. Okay, fine. Now, the bulk of this article by Rabbi J. David Vleich, or if not the bulk, certainly a major, major chunk, is to analyze a very cryptic statement of the Meiri. And this Meiri, which is otherwise known as the Beis HaBechira, appears in Masechta Gittin. Again, this is not on your pages. I don't think you have number 78, because I told you it's a very long article. But I just, for your own curiosity, the Meiri makes a statement which Rabbi Bleich translates in a summary form, and I'll read it to you. They, meaning referring to the Christians, believe in God's existence and in His unity. That's what the Meiri writes. Now watch this. The Rambam is going to say that any denial of the unity is avodah zarah. The Meiri is saying that the Christians believe in His unity, His with a capital H. This Meiri has to be understood because no one could entertain the idea, that's what Rabbi Black writes this whole article about, that the Trinity accepts His unity. So what is this Meiri all about? And he writes the following. I'm just going to read to you a few lines. He says, the Meiri's theological assessment of Christianity is unique in rabbinic literature. As if to say no one would accept this at face value. He quotes one modern writer here who says that it's not just the Meiri, but he thinks he found it in another source called the Baragola in Choshei Mishpat. But again, I'm not going to go into this whole thing because it's pages and pages about what the Baragola did say or he didn't say. But as far as the Meiri is concerned, the chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Yitzhak Isaac Herzog, he was the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, he writes that no one, not even the Meiri, would identify or reconcile Trinitarianism with the belief in the unity of God. By definition, it is not the belief in the unity of God. And at the end of, again, this very, very long presentation, he quotes the Chasam Sofer. As I told you before, the Chasam Sofer lived 150 years ago. And he writes the following. Let me just see if I can find it here. Sorry, just give me a minute because I just want to quote it to you. Okay, sorry, I don't find it now. But anyway, he says the following. The Chasam Sofer writes that the Meiri is a peh kadosh. He has a holy mouth. Where he says, lo yitochen, it's not possible. Again, I'm not quoting it verbatim because right now I don't find it. But it's not possible that the Meiri would have said such a thing. And he goes on to say that it's a mitzvah to erase this line from the Meiri. Do you hear this? A mitzvah to erase a line from the Meiri. Because it's impossible that the Meiri would have said so. And he goes on to assume, this is on page 80, and he goes on to assume, did I give out page 80?
No,
you have the whole article. Excellent. And he goes on to assume that there was a problem of censorship. And many of the writings that we have that date back to that period of time were censored. And very often the Jews themselves had to remove certain lines from the text. Now, if you have the whole article, then I want you to take a look at page 83. Again, for those who have it online, on page 83, he says the following. He quotes Rabbi Heshi Reichman, who's one of the outstanding students of Rav Soloveitchik. And Rav Soloveitchik is quoted on page 83 as saying, as dismissing the views that are expressed, listen to carefully, in the newly published works of the Meiri. Now let me give you a little history about the Meiri. The Meiri was lost for many centuries. And the only copy of the Meiri was in the Vatican. And all that we had from the Meiri until the 20th century was basically ktaim, you know, different pieces and paragraphs that were quoted by other sources. And Rabbi Soloveitchik is quoted as saying that he will not allow any halacha to be derived from the Meiri if the Meiri is based on the manuscripts that we found, whether we found them in the Vatican or we found them in the Cairo Geniza. And all these quotes of the Meiri are a mere curiosity of no normative import, no halachic significance, and hence entirely irrelevant to the halachic process. Now, where was I disappointed in this essay? Right here on page 83. And I'll tell you why. Because Rabbi Bleich managed to whet my appetite. What do I mean? In terms of the theology of Christianity and the belief in the Trinity, this to me is unequivocally Avodah Zorah, whether you accept the Rambam's opinion, the Noda Behuda says that even Tosfos, and even if you accept the later interpretation of Tosfos, that it's Shita. Shita for us is Avodah Zorah. And that's clear. The Meiri should be dismissed. Cross out the line. And Rav Salvech doesn't want to rely on it. But here, he whet my appetite. And I'm going to read to you a sentence in this article on page 83. He writes the following. Beliefs of various other Protestant denominations. Now, interesting. Until now, we've really been focused on Catholics. Catholics, you know, to Catholics, the Trinity is everything. You know what I mean? What about Protestants? Here's where he whets my appetite. He says that there are various Protestant denominations. You know, they have the Anglicans and the Calvinists, and you have the Evangelists, you know, they're very pro-Israel. You know, you have all sorts of different Protestants. And he says, those denominations and their beliefs have to be examined individually. And he goes on to say that it's possible that many of the Protestant denominations did not subscribe to the Trinity.
The Catholic view of the Trinity.
Or at least the Catholic view of Trinity, but for our purposes to the Trinity. And listen to what he says in the next sentence. Now again, I'm not here to present to you the views of Protestants, but he writes...
This is Rabbi Bleich speaking.
This is Rabbi Bleich on page 83. Again, I should have photocopied this for you, but I ran out of paper. He says the following. That amongst the Protestant denominations, others, meaning some of them, venerate the Son. Again, this is not with a U, this is the Son with an O, capital S, as an intermediary between man and God. Okay? They address prayer to Him in the capacity of an intermediary. It's comparable, he says, to the worship of angels as intermediaries. Now the Torah is absolutely opposed to the worship of angels, but it's not clear that the worship of angels is Avodah Zarah. So if there's a Protestant who believes that there's only one God, and we're going to pray to Yashka because he's going to be our great intermediary, that would shine a whole different light on this subject. And this is what whet my appetite. And in the next sentence, he says, if anybody wants to apologize for angel worship and apply this apology to the faith, excuse me, to the faith system of certain Christian denominations, that's beyond the scope of this discussion. And that's where I want to write a letter to the editor. Dear Rabbi Bleich, okay, so tell me, is there such a thing as a Protestant who doesn't believe in the Trinity? And all he believes is that Yashka is an intermediary, and he's basically worshiping an angel. And if worshiping an angel is prohibited, but it doesn't come over by Avodah Zarah, not even for a Jew, then maybe we'd have a whole different perspective on the question of entering into those houses of worship. And somebody told me that in airports they have now
non-denominational
places of worship. Now, the rest of this article is based on the sources that I gave you in the Hebrew photocopy, which I got from olamot.net. We start with a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. The Mishnah says on Daf Yud Aleph, Ir sheyesh ba Avodah Zarah. Imagine, there's a city that has a temple in it. and that temple is dedicated to what we would call for us Avodah Zarah, Asur Likanes L'Shav, we're not allowed to enter into the city. Basically, that means, you know, if you want to go to Europe, and for that matter, many places here in Israel, you might as well sleep out in the, you know, under the sun, under the moon. You know what I mean? So just pitch a tent. You're not allowed to enter into any city in Europe. Is there a city in Europe that doesn't have a church in it? So Rabbeinu Yonah has a new twist on this. Rabbeinu Yonah wants to say that what the Mishnah is referring to is called Yom Idam. Now again, this is a whole, you have to learn all the Masechta Avodah Zarah for this, but Yom Idam is a holiday for the idol worshippers, and what they do is they gather together the people in the big cities in order to commemorate that holiday. On those days, says Rabbeinu Yonah, we're not allowed to enter into that city. Because if we enter into that city, then we're giving sort of veneration or honor to their special celebration. However, the Rambam takes this literally. And the Rambam says, the Mishnah says, Ir sheyesh ba avodah zarah, you're not allowed to enter into the city. There's an Isur Knisa. And the Rambam, just 1 second here. I'm not going to break a bracha because I'm not thirsty. And the Rambam says the following. This is what I call al-chet. Anachnu tachas yideyem ubavanosenu shochnim. We live in their countries and we enter into their cities. Anusim. We have no choice. V'niskayim banu Masha Omar Akosuv, Ve'avadetem Shom Elohim Acherim. God says, I will send you into exile and you will worship other gods. Says the Rambam, we are guilty of worshiping other gods because we violate the law of the Mishnah and we live in those cities. And if you're not allowed to enter into those cities, says the Rambam, how much more so you're not allowed to live in those cities? But again, the Shulchan Aruch, Paskins like Rabbeinu Yonah. So he's going to allow us to enter into those cities, except for Yom Edom. And here, we have an unbelievable chiddush of the Ritva. The Ritva writes that there were certain market days that were commemorated publicly for business transactions on days which were commemorations of idol worship. And the Ritva says that even if we're going into these places of business, these marketplaces, but since going into those on those special days when they announced the market, it was connected to and it was an expression of respect and identification with idol worship, we're not allowed to go into those business places for the sake of business. So I ask you the following question. If premise number one, the Trinity is Avodah Zarah. Premise number two, at the very least, we're not allowed to enter into a Makom Avodah Zarah. Then how can we enter into a church? What I mean to say is the following. That any entry into a place which is a worship for Avodah Zarah is prohibited. And this is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. And all the poskim say that we have to just define the parameters of the church. How far does the church go? Is it only the place where they worship? Or is it other places as well? Now, somebody asked me about the Vatican. I want to tell you a story, and maybe I shouldn't publicize this, but my wife and I were in Rome and we went to the Vatican. What we didn't know is that there's no way out of the Vatican except through the Sistine Chapel. And there is an altar in the Sistine Chapel. I think once a year they actually do their hakravos on that place. So if you'll tell me that the Vatican itself is a museum and it's not a place of worship, then I have two questions to ask of you. Number one, what about an appendage to a church? It means part of the premises of a church. And number two, is there any way out of the Vatican without going through the Sistine Chapel? Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the following question. There's a chatzer, a yard around the church. Are we allowed to go into that chatzer? And he says the following, that we're only allowed to enter into that chatzer if it's crystal clear that we're using it as a shortcut to get to another place. Meaning there's no other way of getting from point X to point Y unless you pass through this courtyard. In that case, no one would suspect you, says Rav Moshe, of entering into the courtyard for purpose of giving expression to the Avodah Zorah. However, if it's another room in the building itself, that for sure is prohibited under all circumstances. And therefore, Rav Moshe was opposed to having any sort of entry of Jew. There was a question about a school for young children, whether they could have the school in the gym or in the basement of a church, and he absolutely forbid it. And this is fascinating to me. I'll tell you why. My father, Zichron Levracha, was the chaplain for many, many decades in a hospital in New York called the Coney Island Hospital. If anyone is here from Brooklyn, they'll know what I'm referring to. And when my father took the position, and one of his major jobs or responsibilities as chaplain, as Jewish chaplain, was to offer service for the Jews, the Jewish patients, that they could come and daven. Well, guess what? The municipality of the city of New York did not have enough funds for a separate chapel for the Jewish clients, Jewish patients. So what they had was a revolving bima, as I call it. And you press the button, and out came you know who, and then he pressed another button, and then it was the Protestants. He pressed a third button, and everything went around and around, and all of a sudden you saw, you know, the Ten Commandments. And the question was whether or not Jewish patients would be allowed to pray in that area, which is designated at the same time as a house of worship for the idol worshippers, for the Christians. And my father desperately needed a heter because otherwise there would be no place for the Jews to pray. So everyone and their uncle told my father, if you need a heter, there's one person you shouldn't ask, and that's Rabbi Soloveitchik. Don't think of asking Rabbi Soloveitchik, because Rabbi Soloveitchik won't even, he'll throw you out. He won't even consider that as a possibility, because Rabbi Soloveitchik thought that anything that smelled of Christianity is prohibited. When JFK died, and there was a there was on television, they televised his funeral in a church, and they asked Rav Soloveitchik, am I allowed to watch the television program? And he said, just like you're not allowed to enter into a church, you're not allowed to bring a church into your house either. And he forbid anyone from watching on television that funeral. In any event, my father at that time turned to Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin was the dean of Halach at that time. This is before Rav Moshe. And Rav Henkin said, I'm going to think about it, but even if I will allow it for you, it's only on the condition that you get four other rabbis to agree. And he mentioned them all by name. And my father spent endless amount of time contacting and communicating with each of one of these rabbis until finally he came back to Rav Henkin and he said that I got the agreement of all these rabbis. And what they were set now, in order to appreciate why they were lenient about this, again, only because of the need to have a place for the Jews to daven, we would have to study a page which I gave you from Eretz Chemda. I gave you one page from Eretz Chemda. And that's going to appear, I think, on the back of one of your pages. Yeah, you have that? Okay. But before I get into this, I just want to tell you the interesting punchline to this story. P.S., as we say, my father never used the heter. Because 2 days after he got the heter, the city of New York found funds for a separate Jewish chapel. However, P.S.S., in the Navy, they relied on this heter. Because on a ship, It's very difficult to have three separate chapels for the three religions, and therefore they have this revolving bima, as I call it, and they rely on this heter. So nothing was lost with all my father's efforts. Now, what happens in the Eretz Chemda article is the following. A man or a woman, we don't know who it is, asks the following question. I was on a trip to Ecuador in South America. You can imagine that in South America they are devout Catholics, pretty much. And I have an interest in buying antiques. So I went into an antique shop and I found a very attractive, how do you say in English, an aron? A cabinet? No, not a cabinet, a chest, we'll call it a chest. Okay, I'm just going to use that word. If you have a better word, let me know. Okay, a chest. And it was silver plated. It had beautiful artistic coverings over it. The only problem is that inside the chest there was some sort of image, a Christian image. And therefore the questioner says, I know that this chest was worshipped, but not worshipped because of the chest itself, but because of the image in the chest. And here's where the tshuva comes. It's very rare that they quote their sources. I printed out a number of their tshuvas. They're very short and sweet, but here he quotes his sources. And he says the following. There's a concept in Avodah Zarah called bitul. Bitul means when the idol worshiper decides that this idol should be destroyed, or at least partially destroyed. That's called hashchata, a partial destruction of the idol. That's called bittul. The law is that if a non-Jew worships an idol, that non-Jew, if he does bittul on the idol, and he completely changes it and transforms it, then a Jew is allowed to benefit from that idol. It's no longer an idol. It loses its status as a chefetz of Avodah Zarah. However, a Jew cannot be mavatel an idol of a guy, meaning only the guy himself or one of his cohorts can do the bittul. A Jew cannot do the bittul. Normally, when a guy sells an idol, and especially to a Jew, and he knows that the Jew is not going to worship that idol, that's called bittul. That means that the guy is more or less declared, I don't care about this idol, it's meaningless to me, it's not really a deity, I'm going to give it to a Jew, and that's it. He says, the only problem here is that even if you sell it to a Jew, and that's called bittul, Jewish bittul is not bittul. We need that the guy himself, the idol worshiper, do something to the object. So the idol worshiper would have had to have ripped out this image from the inside of the chest. But at the end he says, ulam yitachen, perhaps, shatmuna mechuberes le'aron bi'ofen shakol mahav yechida achas. He says it all depends. If they just attach some sort of an image to the chest, then just take out the image and buy the chest. But if the image is somehow connected to the idol, to the aron, to the chest, then in such a case, the entire entity is one indivisible chefta, one object, and therefore the Avodah Zarah, the Ovid Avodah Zarah, the idol worship would have to do bittul on the entire object. Now let's get back, and I'm looking at the clock, and we have to sum things up. But let's get back to the case that my father had with the Coney Island Hospital. And although I can't tell you for sure what was the basis for these five Rabbanim to come up with a kula, I believe that it works through the principle of bittul, which means that when the goyim have a house of worship and they decide to give it over to a Jew, again, I would have said that it requires an absolute permanent transition of ownership, what we call a mechira and a kinyan, but apparently the Rabbanim were vacillating back and forth. Is it enough that they say, you know what, get rid of this bima for the time being, again on a temporary basis, and make it into a synagogue? And that's equivalent to selling the church as a synagogue, which might mean that there's bittul. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Tzitz Eliezer and others have long discussions about whether or not we're allowed to purchase a church. And even if we do, how do we accomplish a transformation of the church so it no longer looks like or remembers the original church? So when you walk into the shul after the revolving bima and it doesn't look like a church, maybe that's considered bittul. Now, you'll ask me, but a Jew can't do bittul on a avodah zarah for goy. But since the goy, you know, he allows you or he designates you to press the button and get rid of his bima, maybe that itself is bittul. Now, just to sum up, in many areas of halacha, the poskim look for leniencies. The only exception to the rule that I found is entering into a house of worship. Maybe, as I said at the outset, because we have a natural distaste, you know, of going into such a place. Shaketz to shaketzenu, as we said. The Kleisenberger Rebbe went so far that he said that a mosque is also a house of worship because the Islamic worshippers will bow down to Mohammed. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know. According to Rav Avad Yosef, the Arabs, when they go into a mosque, as a general rule, they do not bow down to Mohammed, but rather they bow down to Almighty God. And Rav Avad Yosef was talking about going to Maras HaMachpelah, which was created as a mosque, and he relies totally on the Rambam. As extreme as the Rambam was with regard to Christianity, identifying the Trinity as idol worship, even for the Goyim, the Rambam is equally liberal, if you will, and lenient with regard to Islam. Because the Rambam was of the opinion, and he had interchanges with all the Islamic philosophers of his time, he lived in those countries, that they believe in one God. They accept the unity of the God, of one God, and therefore that Islam is not a avodah zarah. He accuses them of making a major mistake, and they have the status of what we call apikarsim, because they deny the veracity of the Torah, but nevertheless, that's not considered idol worship. And based on the Rambam, Shita Rav Avad Yosef permits entering into a mosque. I would not be excited about going into a mosque personally, but if you would ask me, halacha lemaaseh, I say you could rely on Rav Avad Yosef, but with one proviso. Try to find out if you can, if they're worshipping Mohammed. Because if they're worshipping Mohammed, then we're back to Christianity, we're back to Avodah Zarah. But again, as I said, and I can't overemphasize this, in regard to entering a house of worship of Christians, there is a unanimous, normative, expressed halacha, l'chumra, always l'chumra. You can ask me about art, and you can ask me about going in to vote, and you can ask me about going through the chatzer, you can ask me about, you know, playing on a sports field that is an addendum to a church. In all these cases, if you read through a Weiss article, you will see that the poskim that he quotes, and it's a who's list, all agree l'chumra. The only thing that I found is a church that was converted into a different kind of house, for example, a church that's converted into a museum, again, assuming, excuse me, that this museum is separate from any church, it's not an adjunct to a church. And here we have a kula, I don't know if you ever heard of Rav Chaim David Alevi. He wrote a book, many volumes, called Aseh Lecha Rav. He was the Sephardic chief rabbi. And he writes that if they converted the church into a museum, that you're allowed to go into. And probably he's operating with this concept of bittul, where we're not worshipping any trinity, any idols here in this place. However, If you're talking about some structure that is in some way part and parcel of a church that's active, and it's an agenda, an addendum to the church, it's part of the church premises, then as I said at the outset, I could have ended this lecture with my opening line that the Trinity is Avodah Zarah. And here's where I want to end, and I want to end with a tefillah prayer that we should be zocher to see in our time that the Christians will accept our God. The Rambam says that a Christian can become a chassidei umas ha'olam if he rejects idol worship, if he accepts the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, but only on one condition. Says the Rambam, he must premise and predicate his acceptance of the seven mitzvahs on the fact that these mitzvahs were given at Har Sinai to Moshe Rabbeinu. May we see in our day that all the peoples on the world, whether they're in the Far East, whether in the Middle East, whether in the West, will accept the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, and then v'hoyah b'yomahu yi Hashem echad u'shmo echad ken yiratzon. Amen.
I have to ask you a question. And said specifically.
Let me just answer Roz one question. You and I see each other. Yeah. This is a woman that I very rarely see.
Back in the early 70s, there was a program that was Notre Dame College, where we went to Notre Dame College, run by
friends,
and we got our
degree. Was it church?
There was a chapel in there, which we never went into. Every classroom had a person. Every day, they would say their prayer and they would have a stand up while they said their prayer. How do they get this
answer
to
do this? I think it's based on the Meiri. If you accept the Meiri that the Trinity is not called Zohar, again, there's no other Rishon who subscribes to that position. We're not even sure if the Meiri ever said it. You know, someone says race on the line. But I never heard that any post here. Can you write me an email and maybe you can tell me, like, a little bit more details how I can research to your email? AzariaBerzon@gmail.com. AzariaBerzon@gmail.com. No capitals, no separation of words. Alright, I'd be very appreciative because this is a, how should I say, a curveball.
I wanted to ask.
Yes, I'm listening.
Last week I questioned the thing about the cow that won't be
alive
to give birth, but it's called the mother. And I questioned that. And then there was a woman with a baby in the back, and she couldn't get up to tell you. She had a further question. See, the thing is, the cow is not only giving an egg, but she's functioning as a mother until the birth. So the question is, which of those two is relevant? But then she added something else, that when they do artificial fertilization, they take the eggs out of the mother, and it's done in a test tube, and then it's never in the uterus of the mother as a fertilized egg, and receiving no nurturing from the mother, so it's only her eggs. So it's definitely this question that I had.
Look, I it would take me a while to think this through, but just a, I don't know if this will be meaningful for you, but my knee-jerk response would be the following. That any rabbi who encourages surrogate motherhood for the sake of a woman who can't carry to term should condition it on the following. Take the, I think it's called the zygote, and inject it back into the mother's body. In other words, leave it there for,
and she has her eggs frozen.
Right, so I don't know.
There's no way to do it.
Yeah, so I don't know if you could do it in all cases, but I'm just saying that in the ideal situation of advocating and recommending surrogate motherhood, it would be under the following conditions. I didn't even get last week to discuss the 30-day period or the 40-day period, because really, if we want to see that this woman is not only the hereditary, the genetic mother, but also has an element of pregnancy, then we want it to be for a minimum of 40 days. Now, it seems that, from what I heard, that modern technology, which is moving at the speed of light, could actually pull this off. That even though a woman can't carry till term, she could carry for 40 days. I have to check that out. You know, I take that with...
Not if she had the hysterectomy. Okay, so then the other question is, a wet nurse is
can
not.
Can I ask you to take down my email address and maybe we could be in touch by email? I'll tell you why. I have a lecture in 20 minutes.
Okay,
understand. And they asked me to fill in for Rabbi Manning, I think it is.
Oh,
is,
yeah.
Is
he? Yeah, you have
so
to.
I, you know, I try to
where
fit
are you
it
speaking?
In.
Where is the Nussie? Big Nussie? Where are you speaking?
No, no, no. Now?
No, in 20 minutes.
Oh, in the AMIC Learning Center.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's where I hang out.
But you said Rabbi Manning.
No, I say this lecture I just gave.
I know.
I filled in for
all
Rabbi
right.
Manning.
So I'll hear my notes. I'll talk.
Yeah.
Here, can you just write
it here?
And by the way, I assume you can write while I'm talking. Some Protestant denominations, they regard JC as just a teacher.
Wow.
The far left.
You got to include that for me in this email, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem. It's
all right.
They question the whole divinity of
because
JC.
Rabbi Bleich, when he gets to this point, he says it's beyond the purview. You know what I'm saying? And that's where I got a little disappointed.
Okay, the other question is on Muhammad and JC. Is there a problem if the Gentiles take a prophet that we would not recognize?
Yeah, for sure.
There's
that's
a
absolutely
separate prohibition.
Yeah, that
even
comes under apikorsis. You know, it's not really
it's not
a vote of Zara, but.
Okay. Okay.